Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next episode, the April 15th Tax Day episode of Let's Talk TV Live. I'm your host, Barbara Barnett, joined tonight by our heart, Chrissy.
And hi.
Hello. Hi, Chrissy. And by Jerome Wetzel TV, Jimmy Daly, or James
hello.
Daly. And it's kind of a weird night. You know, it's like I was kind of tossing back and forth all evening, all afternoon, as this story at the Boston Marathon happened, I kept tossing back and forth whether I should postpone the show or cancel the show or, you know, and then I thought, you know what, I'm not going to do that. We're going to come on the air. I did want to talk about the coverage and all of that of the bombings for a few minutes, if you guys would not mind indulging me.
Okay.
And yeah, then we'll get down to it. To the subject at hand and other things. But yeah, I mean, it was weird. I teach an after school class at a synagogue and a religious school, and my kids, they're fifth graders, right? These kids are 10, 11 years old.
Wow.
And they came in and all they wanted to do was talk about this. And of course they all have a super affluent area of the Chicago area. So, like, they almost all have iPhones. So they're all saying, oh, you know, this is the information, and this is the information, and this is what happened, and that's what happened. And I'm like, you know what, guys, we're only going to talk about this for a couple of minutes because this is something you guys need to talk about with your families. That's not what this class is about. But, you know, you can't rely on what you get texted. And there's a lot of stuff going out there. And I talked to my sister earlier, and she was like, oh, yeah, you know, it was this Saudi Arabian guy that did it. And I'm like,
what?
How do you know?
Where did you get that from?
No. I mean, like, there's nothing. Well, but that's what, it's like the New York Post, which that's not the most reliable of newspapers in the world.
Right.
You know, it's like, I don't. You know, it's like it could be domestic terrorism. At the point that it was at 4 o'clock this afternoon, it didn't, you know, could have been some sort of gas pipe bombing, you know, gas leak or something. You, nobody knows. Everybody jumps to conclusions. And terrorism can mean anything. It can mean domestic terrorism. It could be insane, crazy guys. It could be psychotics. It could be any number of things. My daughter, who went to college in Boston, did her undergrad. She's now in Seattle doing her graduate work. But she spent 4 years in Boston at Brandeis. And she was freaking out. I mean, she said, Mom, I talked to her on the phone. She says, Mom, I just want to talk on the phone with you because I know so many people in Boston. And this is really freaking me out. And we actually last week went to a fundraiser, and I don't know if you guys know who Peter Sagal is, NPR's show Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. He was the speaker.
So, oh, okay.
He's in Chicago. He's like sort of a Chicago guy, and I think he lives in this area now. And he was actually running in the Boston Marathon, so it was like. I was thinking of Peter today, and, you know, that. But, yeah, I mean, it's like everybody jumps to a lot of conclusions, and I've learned that you just can't do that.
Well, I think a lot of that's the coverage. I mean, like, we were from the NPR this afternoon, and they're even, like, bringing in some guy who, from our Columbus where we live, that just happened to be in Boston. He wasn't anywhere near it. He didn't know anything, but they're bringing him on and talking to him because they have to fill constant airtime.
Right. Well, that's the problem, is that what is breaking news?
Right.
What is breaking news? If it's not, you know, and this is why I'm going to bring this back to fiction TV,
is why I think shows like Newsroom, The Newsroom, which is coming back July 14th, by the way, just announced by HBO, I think, Friday, that'll be coming back on July 14th, why shows like that are so important. Because they do point out certain things that are lax in TV news. I mean, what is breaking news? When I was growing up, and when you guys were probably breaking up, although you're both breaking up, I'm sorry. Growing up, you're not breaking up.
I don't even know what
you're
doing.
Oh, we were dating? I didn't even know that.
I didn't know you were dating. I bet you guys didn't know that. You're not even in the same city.
I know, really.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
But what was I going to say? But the reason shows like that are so important is because they point out, when we were all growing up, and as I said, you guys are younger than I am, but still, when there was something that was breaking news, it was breaking news. You know, broke into the networks. It's now breaking news on MSNBC or breaking news on CNN. It's like, somebody's dog got caught. Of course, today's was much, much, much more dire and scarier and more tragic. We still don't know how many people have been injured. I suspect it's going to end up being more than the 122 that is being reported.
Right.
We don't know how many people have died. There have been children that have been badly injured. Many of the injured are critically injured. There was shrapnel in the bombs. But we don't know anything. We just don't know. So I'm just going to kind of wait and see and watch and follow it. And, hopefully,
the thing is you just can't. You just can't, you have to wait till all the facts come in before everybody starts jumping to conclusions. But you were saying earlier, we were talking briefly earlier that, April's not a very good month for domestic stuff anyway for us.
Yeah, well, it's tax day, by the way. Tax day. My taxes are done. We actually got a very nice refund. I was very pleased.
Oh, well, that's good.
And my son did his taxes on his own for the first time.
Welcome to the world.
I've usually done his taxes because he's usually only had like a summer job. And now this year he worked during the school year. And he said, Mom, when I come in for spring break, can I have my W-2s and stuff? And will you walk me through my taxes? So it was really nice. And he called me yesterday. He says, okay, Mom, I'm ready. What do I do?
That's so funny.
So we walked through his taxes, and there has been I'm getting tweets. That's why I'm getting distracted. Teresa, you just distracted me. I hope you're listening in. It was really sweet, and we got all the way through, and then we ended, and he called about like 11:30 last night. I'm like, what's wrong? And he said, well, I got home and I printed it out, and it said I needed a 1099-T. What's that? And I said, no, that's for college. But we pay that.
Right.
We pay that. We get to take that off on our taxes.
right. Not you.
You did a 1040-EZ. You don't have you made about $400 this year. you get all
that's
of that
so
back
funny.
And yes, don't worry. But it says I need a 1099-R, and I said, for what? I have 1099-Rs, but you don't have a 10. So it was cute. He's like, okay, well, I was freaking out and I don't know if the post office is open. I said, honey, it's Sunday night. Really?
Right.
Take it with you, put a stamp on the envelope, sign it, and put it in the mailbox at school.
Right.
But it was really sweet. And I hope he's not listening because he will be so embarrassed. He is himself a radio impresario. He has created the most cool radio station ever, an internet-only radio station. Okay, guys, if you are listening, because it's going to be going live for the first time,
cool.
He's been creating it. He's been doing it for a year and a half. He did a Kickstarter. He did all kinds of stuff at school. It is going live. It is called PizzaFM, PIZZAFM.org. So everyone who's listening to this, he doesn't actually know that I'm promoing his radio station. It's like a whole streaming radio station. It is incredibly cool. It is the station for super indie alternative indie music. Really indie,
oh, cool.
indie music, like punk and just indie, ultra indie record store stuff, and
sort of like what's up here. We have a big indie community in Seattle.
Oh,
yeah,
I know. You know, we had an internship last summer at Sub Pop.
Oh, cool.
Up in Seattle, and he wrote for The Stranger a little bit.
Awesome.
And he actually had applied for a job at KEXP, but we'll see. We'll see if he gets it. But anyway, so pizzafm.org. It's a really cool thing, and you should check it out. All right. So where to start? Oh, one more thing. Sorry. And I know this is like, I've been like yammering on here, but I'm a little discombobulated. The novel is going on. It's been selected by the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Online Workshop Critique Group. It's like a big established group. The first 7,500 words have been picked as an editor's choice.
Awesome.
And it's going to be reviewed extensively in their forthcoming newsletter, which is like, oh my God, I just joined this group too. And so
I'm really congratulations.
Thank you. It's like they pick four submissions, one in sci-fi, one in fantasy, one in horror, and a short story. And this is like huge, huge honor. So they pick submissions that will quote unquote seem to be have the most possibilities,
mm-hmm.
or who have captured the editor's admiration. So I'm really excited. I'm like freaking out. But so yes. So
that is so cool.
Along. I'm now 1/4 of the way through the edit. So I'm doing a chapter a day at least. So anyway. So
very cool.
So I ranted this morning. The title of today's show is Hiatuses and Other Rants. So I know Jerome, Jimmy, you've been ranting yourself a little bit too on Blog Critics, as have I. All three of us write for Blog Critics, among other things. And I did a rant this morning. Last night, I don't know if either of you guys watched the Once Upon a Time, The Price of Magic special.
I did.
Okay.
I skimmed it.
Yeah, I watched it. And I don't know if anyone in the chat room or listening in Radio Land listened to it. But if you did, raise your hand or tweet me or something like that. Even if you're not in the chat room, people have been tweeting me while I've been doing the show. So I'm keeping my tweet deck open. Watching it last night, and it was actually pretty well done. And it was what it basically did is it took everybody through a year and 3/4 of Once Upon a Time. It looked at some of the pivotal relationships. It looked at the narrative arcs, all of the major narrative arcs, and I'm saying major narrative arcs because it did not talk about Red, and it didn't talk about Rumble, and it didn't talk about...
Yeah, why didn't they talk about my Rumble? I was upset about that.
I know. You know, when I finished it, I said, oh my gosh, people who are fans of Rumble are going to be really upset with this. And
especially coming the week before that big episode.
Yeah, I was kind of waiting and waiting, thinking, oh, they're going to do it at the end, they're going to do it at the end. And so my husband says, well, they sort of alluded to it at the end. And I said, well, right, they showed Mr. Gold standing over Belle's hospital bed looking really, really bad, as only Robert Carlyle can look. and it was like, and they mentioned Cora and Adam Horwitz and Eddie Kitsis said the S word when it came to, did you hear that? Yeah, that they they said, well, you know, Cora and Rumple were maybe sort of soulmates at one time.
Yeah, I was like,
I'm like, well,
he didn't just say that, did he?
I was so mad. Yeah, that was really weird. And so, I mean, I can see, I mean, Rumple is a character to me who as long as he's lived, and it's really funny because as I'm writing, as I'm editing my novel, I'm like noticing there are things about Rumpel, not things that I read into the character, nothing that's overt, things that I read into that character,
right,
that I write into every character. I mean, like for years I've written this character, so I know these kinds of characters. But there's something about Rumpel that allows him, despite everything that he has a heart, and he has a great capability and a capacity to love. And
right.
He can love multiple times. Someone who's lived as long as he has and who has that much emotion inside of him, because he is, for all as unemotional as Mr. Gold can be, and I say can be because we have seen him be incredibly emotional, Rumpel is pure emotion.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree
right?
with that.
He acts on his emotions all the time,
right.
For better or for worse. So it would be inconceivable to me that he wouldn't have had loves through the years, especially after Mila, who had stomped on his heart, broken it, and thrown it out a 100-story window and shot it full of bullet holes. I mean, that's what Mila did to him. So, so I can understand him falling in love with Cora, and I can understand Cora falling in love with him.
Right.
And for him to feel that he's lovable. Now, when she broke his heart, that's when he is now nobody can love me. I'm not capable of being loved. And that's where that started. It really destroyed him. So to say that there's soulmates kind of bugs me.
That was really, I was like, okay, did he really say that?
And Betsy
was his soulmate. I'm sorry, but
yeah. And Betsy is saying in the chat room, Cora only loved the dark one part of him. Yeah. Yeah, see, that's the thing I don't get. Cora liked the dark one, right? But at his heart, the best part of him, the better part of him, his better nature is not the dark one. He is that loving father.
Right,
he makes
exactly.
He makes bad choices. And,
mm-hmm. and I don't think that, I mean, definitely Cora wouldn't have fallen in love with that side of him.
She would have been
there
with Mila.
Yeah, exactly.
She would have been right there with Mila. So, but I want to get back to the hiatus thing, okay? We're going to talk about this other stuff in the second half hour, because I do want to talk about Lacey a little bit, and I want to talk about this. But this Price of Magic thing last night, which was basically this, okay, we're going to catch you guys up on the narrative of the show, and we're going to bring you up to speed, because we haven't been on for a while, and, everyone's probably forgotten what's going on in this very complex weave of a narrative. So it got me thinking. So shows like this, and Jimmy, you and I have talked about this, I think, is that you have a show, you've got a TV season, a regular primetime TV season that is 30, I counted, by the way, this morning, 37 weeks long.
Okay.
And you have your average TV show on network TV runs 22 episodes, maybe 24, but usually 22 episodes.
Anymore. It was 26 only 10, 15 years ago.
It was 28 in the 80s.
Yeah.
So
it's been slowly decreasing for quite a while.
It was 30 episodes in the 60s. I mean, in the 60s, and in the 70s, when I was a kid, you would have reruns during winter break. You'd have two reruns, Christmas and New Year's. You'd have Easter, spring break, there'd be a rerun. There'd probably be a rerun Mother's Day. There would be a rerun if it was a Sunday night and it was the Academy Award. There'd be like specials. And they would be
it would be for special reasons. There's
a little preemption. But other than that.
Well, a lot of big shows now, too, keep in mind, do at least one 2-hour block a year as well, which and some of them do several double episode
right.
blocks.
Right.
So that makes even more reruns.
Right. So, you know, you don't have enough episodes. So you don't
mm-hmm.
have enough episodes to fill, even begin to fill.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
what happens is, with a show like Once, is you get this narrative arc going, and then all of a sudden, boom, you, and I was kind of looking since December. There were like two episodes, I think there was one episode in December, two episodes in January, I think. I put this in
yep.
an article.
No,
two episodes
you're right.
in January, two episodes in February.
In February.
I think there were more than two. There were four episodes in February. But since then, there have only been two episodes. And
mm-hmm.
one in March and one in April. And that's
pretty typical across all the shows.
Yeah, and there's no way, and it's fine if it's a procedural.
Yeah, Elementary can handle it.
Yeah, but yeah, there's a different problem with Elementary, and I'll get to that in a minute. I didn't write about that. I started to put stuff about Elementary in there, but I didn't because I felt it was like a different gripe.
Uh-huh.
I was in a really ranty mood this morning. But what happens is you lose it. You lose the thread. It's gone. All that tension gets built up, and then so if you've got a procedural where everything's self-contained, fantastic. You know, so what if you're on the air and then off the air and then who cares? But if you've got a show that's dependent on remembering what happened 3 weeks ago, you're screwed. You know?
Yeah.
It really screws up.
Yeah, I mean, my whole thing is this. Like, I would prefer, I like how they do, for instance, good example is Walking Dead. They came back, they did 12 episodes, boom, 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 you're done. I would prefer if they, instead of coming back in September, just either come back full on and you're going to do, you know, almost the entire season. I would rather they just do from January to May and run the full season. The thing is, the problem that I have... 24
used to do.
24 did that, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, 24. Exactly, thank you. And it was great because it's a serialized... It's like there's mythology going all around it. There's so many... I was glad that they did the recap because I had forgotten quite a bit, to be honest with you,
yeah.
as far as the earlier part of the season.
Right.
And it ruins the momentum. And that is
yeah.
the same thing. Like, and I want to say briefly, web series. That's why these web series are so they do 7 or 8 or 9 episodes all in a row,
right.
you know, and they come to a conclusion and they're done. And I mean, like,
right.
they,
but a lot of those,
didn't have a,
but
yeah,
a lot, of,
but I mean,
a
like,
lot of those, sorry, go ahead.
No, I thought, no, it's the same. They're going to have a show like this because it was the same thing when Lost was on.
Right.
I would get so frustrated because
right.
there was so many breaks and you're like, okay, what the hell is going on
yeah,
now?
It,
what was it?
It breaks the moment.
That's why Lost halfway through its run stopped doing that. They started doing 16-episode seasons, and they would only run them once a year.
Right.
Yeah, which is what I think they need
Can't
to
do that.
With Once Upon
so,
a Time, as much as I, you know, it's just too hard.
So what happens then? So I proposed in my article, so everybody go read the article, guys.
I did. It was great.
Thank you. You know, it's... Sometimes my first draft articles end up being the best. I actually, that went from my pen to the site. It did not pass. My articles don't pass an editor's pen. I don't have to go through an editor. So it went from my pen to the site like automatically. Oh, see, somebody mentioning House. Yes. Okay. So I was just going to actually talk about House. Thank you, Katie. See, my Twitter's open because I know now people tweet more than they type stuff into the chat room. That's right. House had a lot of hiatuses too. But you could always rely that the really, except for the first three seasons, where you really the show was really really you couldn't really well, I take that back. First season was a lot of standalones. Second season was a lot of standalones. It didn't matter. By the third season, you really had the narrative going. The first season had several, but they had several stories. They had multi-episode arcs. So instead of a full season arc, you had the Tritter arc, you know, where House was in trouble with with drug fraud. Or you had the beginning of the season. The season three is a perfect example of House. So you had the beginning arc where House had had this surgery, he was shot, and now, you know, is the pain coming back? And there was this whole, I think it was 4-episode arc. And then you went right from that, where it, by the time we hit to episode 4 in third season, House's pain was back, he's having a really hard time. Boom, the end of in episode 5, he gets arrested. And then that went on through January. And even though there was a hiatus in there, that got, you know, that actually went on too long and was affected by a long hiatus. Katie's saying House is head in Wilson's heart, but that was season 4. And that was a two episodes written by the same writers at the very end of the season. Those end of the season episodes, this is what I was going to say about House and about some other shows like that, is that they started somewhere along the line, and guys, correct me if I'm wrong, they reserved those character arc, those ongoing storylines for sweeps.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Right? Because you knew, yeah. that arc was going to draw out until it got to February or May, November, you know, whatever it was, those episodes that were going to be like wham were always during the sweeps. So worked pretty well with a show like House, where, okay, so you have standalones, but they're not really standalones because things happen in those standalones that give you insight into House or insight into House's relationship with Wilson or House's relationship with Cameron or House's relationship with Cuddy. So you have those, and at the end, actually at the end of season 5, if you missed any of the last 6 episodes, which were aired consecutive weeks, you know, from the time Kuttner kills himself in season 5 all the way through the end of season 5, you can't really take one of those episodes out. That was like a little novel, you know. Sort of. But now I want to get to Elementary. There's another problem with this whole thing is like really got me bothered. You can tell. You tell?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah. So with Elementary, and you know, I'm kind of been on a soapbox about Elementary also, because I have felt as much promise as the show has had at the beginning of the season, and I loved it. You guys know that. I interviewed Rob Dougherty. I had such a great time talking with him. I was really pumped that Peter Blake and Liz Friedman were writing for the show. And I, all of a sudden, that were in November, they had, you know, toward November, and they actually didn't have a hiatus issue, because they actually ran all the way through December. I was actually surprised at how many episodes they aired into December and into January and into February. And then, boom, the episodes stopped in February.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we've had 2 episodes since February 21st, I think. There have only been 2 new episodes, or maybe there have been more than that. But they've all been Crime of the Week. They've all been Murder of the Week, right?
It's CBS.
You know, you had that incredible episode M. I mean, what an incredible episode that was. Where, you know, Sherlock meets who he thinks is Moriarty, but turns out not to be. And he actually treads into, and I still, that episode, I've watched it a few times, that episode really skates very close to Dexter territory to me. You know?
I love Dexter. Yeah.
And because it really, you get this wham, because the emotional impact of what Holmes was doing, I mean, torturing this guy, really. He was planning on torturing him and then murdering him. And you don't get there with a primetime character on network TV, ever. But
that's
what's happened since then, where has been the impact?
Oh, they're saving it for May sweeps.
Of course they are.
They're bringing Maureen Hardy back for May sweeps. They just cast Irene Adler, wonderful actress.
Yes, yes. They have cast blah, blah, blah. They have cast Anne Boleyn.
From the Tudors in Game of Thrones. Yeah, I can't remember her name right now, but she's great.
Yes, yes. They have. It's like I was thinking. Okay, so they, because Once Upon a Time has Mary Tudor,
right?
Yes, it does.
Has Anne Boleyn. How interesting. So, but yeah. So of course it's going to all play out, and you know we know that. So, but it bothers.
And those episodes are going to be great. So just skip the other ones till we get there.
They're going to be phenomenal. I know they're going to be phenomenal, but what happens in between, it's like, what? They totally forget the narrative thread, and it really bugs me as a writer. They used to do that on one of the great things about House, and I'm just thinking about this. Maybe what made House such a great show was that even when they had standalone episodes, almost always, except for the last two seasons, because the last two seasons, in my opinion, were not quite as good as the first six. But the first six seasons, even if you had a standalone episode, 75 to 80% of the time, you walked away from that episode knowing a little bit more about House. There were no inconsistencies in the character. His ethical code was consistent from the pilot to the end. When it got inconsistent was in the last season, the final season. But
right.
even
and
the
that's why
sort of,
it was, yeah, that's was, why it was the final season, I think too.
I think so, and I think everybody expected it to be the final season. I don't think there were too many people who didn't, including the writers and the actors. And I think everyone was kind of like, we need to end this. But that was what I think made House so special. And maybe that's what it was. I think this just occurred to me like within the last 5 seconds, is that's what was different about that show. No matter how many hiatuses it had, and as infuriating as it was, even in those episodes, you still found something else. There was something new added to that onion that was House, that, you know, peel back the layers. The big peelings, the devastating episodes, the ones that just sort of like, oh my God, were during sweeps. And in Elementary, they used to do this. Chris Carter did this in the X-Files all the time. He would save up the, he have these big mythology episodes in November, February, and May.
Right.
And the rest of the time were, Monster of the Week. And everything that we know about Fox Mulder and his obsession about his sister and the undercurrent of love between him and Scully. No, I was not a shipper. I was an Uster.
I was a shipper. I loved it.
I was an Uster.
I was dying for them to get together.
I was an Uster. It was Ust for me, unresolved sexual tension. I wrote a billion X-Files fan fictions. And I never, ever, ever had them get together. I was so mean.
They're just adorable together.
They were great together. But Chris Carter did this all the time, and it drove the fans crazy because they would have like amnesia. Wait a second. I thought, Scully, this happened with Scully and this happened with Mulder. And it's like, wait, they forgot. It's like, oh, they're off to yet another monster. I'm like, what? So,
yeah.
There were some seasons where they were better at it than others. But, yeah. Anyway, so that really was on my mind today, this morning before the Boston bombings kind of, blew me away a little in a different way. So that was kind of my thing. And Jerome, you did a piece yesterday, I published up on the site, on genre switching in the middle of the... Yeah, you want to tell us about that?
sure. The spark of that is I was watching Glee, and I try my darndest to stay away from any spoilers or anything. So I really did go into the episode completely cold, not knowing what was going on. They flashed a little bit at the beginning that said, you know, this episode depicts school violence. And I'm like, it's Glee. It's not going to be anything. And about halfway through the episode, you know, they had their singing, they had their fun moments. All of a sudden, gunshots rang out in the halls of McKinley High School. And for 10 full minutes, it was just the kids crying, scared to death, in the room. I mean, I had this cold, like, grip on my heart, and I could not move.
Me
I was
too.
Just in shock and so upset about it. And then the whole thing turns out to be a misunderstanding. Nobody's actually hurt. You know, it was an accidental firing. Yeah, but still, to take a show that's a lighthearted comedy, and it dips its toe in drama. I mean, they've done teen pregnancy, they've done a car wreck, but they never let it get melodramatic and sappy. It's always a comedy at its heart. And
you
have this, like, 10 minutes where you're just terrified for these characters.
Right.
It did not fit the mold of the show at all.
Yeah. Well, you know,
it was so weird. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
It's okay. When I was reading your column, when I was editing it this morning, I was like, you know, I was reading it along, and I was like, well, you know, MASH did stuff like that. And then, of course, you mentioned MASH.
Yeah, but MASH was completely different because they started dropping in serious stuff from the beginning,
right.
And it got more and more serious as it went on, and it was never out of tone. It was always, I mean, it was in a war.
Right.
Yeah, I actually mentioned quite a few other shows throughout the article.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So that's disconcerting, of course. What
I was surprised they went there. I didn't expect it. I didn't have any clue. I didn't see anything about previews, nothing or whatever. I was like, oh my God, what are they doing? You know, and it was just, it was very, yeah. I mean, I was like, my heart was, like, oh my God, are they going to kill? I was worried, you know, oh my God, are they going to kill Mr. Shu? What's happening? And then one of the kids wanted to go out into the hallway, and I'm just like,
well,
oh, my God.
Well, because the girl he liked was in the bathroom, and she didn't have her phone, and he couldn't get to
her.
They had to, like, wrestle him down and be like, you're putting everyone's lives in danger. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is horrible.
It was like, oh, my God, I could not believe it. And I know, I felt bad for Brittany. She's, like, all by herself. She's in the bathroom.
She was her tears dripping into the toilet. It was,
yeah.
And then when he finds her and all the stalls open and all the kids come out,
it was really, really
rough. And granted, it was a fantastic hour of television. It was extremely well done. They actually wrote it into the story in a way that made sense without getting too cheesy.
It was just not the tone
you're used to from the show.
So,
and I still haven't read my review of the episode. I've watched it twice. Second time did not have anywhere near the same effect. But, you know, and I'm pondering it. But, I mean, and they had a purpose. I mean, school shootings do come out of nowhere. They are this thing that changes everybody's world. But I just don't know that that's right for a show that's such a lighthearted thing. I mean, parents watch it with their kids for it to go into that territory like that.
Well, especially after the Sandy Elementary shooting. And then also, I was talking to
Barbara
a little bit beforehand. Yeah, I mean, the Columbine, it's the anniversary of Columbine shooting, too. So
which
I was surprised that they even missed it with that.
It might have been the...
They did it because of Sandy Hook. They started writing it after Sandy Hook.
Okay.
Sandy
Hook.
Okay. So,
yeah, I mean, it's a jarring thing to do. Was the issue of it, you know, was it that particular that they made it so intense? Was that what it was, or was it, you know, that shows really shouldn't switch into
that context in some sense? I mean, like, I didn't see that coming at all.
Maybe that was their point. And again, I didn't see it. But maybe what that was the point was.
Well, possibly, yeah. I mean, like, yeah. And I mean, it was good. It was intense, but I don't know. I just didn't expect it at all. And then, I mean, and I knew it was Becky too. When Sue caught to it, I'm like, oh no, they're getting rid of Sue, which means I guess she's off the show, which upsets me because
she's
one of my favorite characters.
She's not leaving the show. The truth's going to come out and it'll get resolved. But as soon as Sue confessed, you knew it was Becky.
Yeah, totally.
Obvious immediately. And that's why it was. And the way Sue did it, I mean, Sue could have covered it up and nobody would have ever found out it was Becky. I think Sue stepped forward because she saw the loss of innocence and the fear that everyone was walking through the halls with, and I think she confessed to give everybody their lives back, you know?
Yeah, so that they didn't, no, I agree with that, totally.
The very noble self-sacrifice from a character who, I mean, that's always her best moments is when she goes into noble territory, which doesn't happen that often, but they're always good.
But it's always, and it's always a great moment for her. I mean, you know, I love Sue Sylvester. She's, I mean, just all the zingers and everything. I mean, she just, I really miss the rivalry between her and Will. Like, I think that the first two seasons were, like, just so great in that respect. And then it just kind of hasn't been as exciting without that rivalry, but... But,
I hope that she's softened and become friends, but it's just, I don't know.
So I want to bring it back to my original kind of thing, kind of wrap that up, and I realized I never got around to my point.
Sure.
Oops, sorry.
No, that's okay, that I never got around to the point of why I wrote the rant, or what I proposed. It was clear why I wrote it, but I was actually quite positive at the end. And what I proposed was that US TV, network TV, adopt what either the cable channels or British TV does, and that is much shorter seasons. Do the 22 episodes. Please do the 22 episodes.
Yeah.
But do them 11 with their own arc, and then do another 11 on the back end.
Or just have a fall season and a spring season.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean.
That extends into the summer more.
Right, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, fall
I
season
mean,
that runs from September to December.
Making it run August to December. I mean, squeeze 22 episodes in the fall, have a different slate of shows for the spring.
Oh,
right.
Well, you know what? I actually don't like that. You know why I don't like that? Because I'm an old-fashioned girl. I don't want my shows to go away. I really don't like that I have to wait a year for Game of Thrones.
Or Walking Dead's the worst. They give you 8 hours at a time and then take it away.
Yeah,
I know. But
eight in the fall, eight in the spring. Ugh.
You know, I would like 11 and 11. Take December, January, February off, and air something else. You know, I think Once Upon a Time, I think Kitsis and Horowitz are. Their plan for Wonderland or whatever the show is going to be is sort of trying to address that, I think.
Yeah, and then they have 35 hours instead of 22, so.
Yeah, 35 hours to go along, and what? How long did I say at the beginning of the show?
37. So if you have a couple 2 hours, I mean, if they only take 4 weeks off between September and May, and there will be weeks for like Christmas or whatever, that works well.
Yeah, it works really, really well. But what they should do is not just, you know, peter off at the end of the fall season. They should actually have, okay, this is our mini cliffhanger, or not, you know, necessarily a cliffhanger, but our resolution to
this particular
season 3A, you know, and then and then we're going to do season 3B. You know, I'm kind of I'm a Virgo. I like things organized, but you should see my house. It's not.
My
brain is organized that like a Virgo. My brain is completely organized like a Virgo. So you know, I that was kind of my conclusion. I mean, the Brits, you know, British TV, the seasons are much shorter, and they are all completely written before they shoot frame one. You know, they know exactly how it's going to be plotted out. And I think there's something to be said for that as well. So
here's the issue with that, though. And, I mean, you've got a great point for the serial shows, and I completely agree with you. And I'm somebody that mostly only watches serial shows. But they've discovered that American television audiences, many of them just want the hour and they're done. I mean, this is why NCIS, like, tops the charts. This is why, I mean, the television season caters to the most popular shows. And our stuff gets stuck back because a lot of people just won't watch serial shows or they'll only watch it when they can get it on DVD or Netflix and stream 20 episodes at a time.
So, interestingly enough, is probably why I only watch a handful of shows on a regular basis.
There's so many serials out there, especially when you've been in the cable networks. I mean, I watch almost no procedurals. I basically watch serials.
I do, too.
Yeah, me too. I watch all serials. Are you kidding? I mean, I'm a serial. Well, I watch soap operas, so there you go. I watch General. So there you go. But you know, it's just, I mean, I can't. I love all those shows that have the mythology and the continuing storylines that are going through, mm-hmm. you know, year after year. And I don't know. I just fell in love. I don't know why. I just love it. It just it brings more depth to the show.
It does. Well, yeah. Right. I think what it is it's a difference between reading a bunch of really short like articles and reading a novel.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Wait, Barbara, you're gonna put us all out of business. Short articles are great.
Yes, they are. Well, you know, my articles are never short.
Well, my episode might be 4 or 5 pages, I realized. I was like, oh my God, you know, I don't realize it.
You guys, spoiler alert.
Okay,
so everybody should kind of watch for big, cool, I cannot say anything about them, but very cool, big, fantastic, beautiful things are going to be happening at Blog Critics. So,
yay!
Keep posted.
Wait.
Chrissy and Jerome, I will tell you off air what those are.
Okay.
Anyone that would like to send PayPal payments to my email address can buy their way into the secrets as well.
Speaking as the executive editor of Blog Critics, no, it's going to be cool. It's going to be great. We've been working on this for about over a year, and we're going to be relaunching because the site's not out. It's fine, but we're going to be launching the new site but soon. Keep posted. Keep your eyes on blogcritics.org. Keep your eyes peeled. So that'll be really cool. So you were talking about, yes, how many pages. But my average episode commentary is like 1,500 words. My house episode commentaries would often run 2,500 words. Mm-hmm. There's just not as much to say with Once Upon a Time. But sometimes there is.
Well, you know, once you get going, you just don't realize. And then it's just kind of like, okay, keep going.
I know. So, all right, let's talk about Once Upon a Time is back Sunday. Yay, finally.
Clapping noise, woo. God, it's been a long time. I just didn't realize how much I was missing it until I saw last night's episode. I'm like,
I know. And you know what? I've been keeping my eyes peeled, as it were, on the ABC MediaNet site.
Cool.
Or anything that's, you know, and there's nothing. Nothing new today. I'm actually refreshing it because sometimes I'll do something at night. Now, I was kind of hoping because it's coming back after a while.
They might post
a screener or something, but they haven't yet. Now, sure. It's only Monday. So it's very possible that they'll post it tomorrow or Wednesday if they're going to do it. It'll be by Wednesday. So they often do that with some of the bigger impact episodes. So, Betsy's saying, I don't think Ron Bell is very high on their priority list.
Nope.
You know, they made a really – it's kind of a shame. And I don't know. I mean, I know they made a very big deal of Emily Duravin coming onto the show.
Right.
And I don't know why. I mean, Rumpel is a key character on the show. I mean, there's no question.
Mm-hmm.
He is.
Agreed.
He is, maybe with the exception of, you know, Emma and Snow.
Yeah.
I think he and Regina, of the male characters, I think he is probably the most critical character of the male characters.
I agree.
And so he's, you know, in the show last night, there was a lot of Rumple. There was a lot.
But it was with Cora.
It was with Cora.
What the hell?
With Balefire. It was.
Yeah.
Where's my Rumple?
So,
you know, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know where it's going. I do know that where this leads for next season, I don't know. Now, I read an interview with Robert Carlyle, and as far as the article said, the interview says, he knows about the new series. But as far as people saying, oh, maybe, you know, he's gonna take a trip to Wonderland, I don't know about that. I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think the main characters are going to do.
There's no time.
They'll do little, if anything.
There's no time.
Yeah, I agree.
How are they going to do that? So I don't know. I don't know. So I think Lacey is going to be. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. I love the idea that Rumple is again turning to David.
Yes.
He's done that before. And I think there's a reason for that. Well, I think he sees David and Snow. I think he sees Charming and Snow White is his ideal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For true love, right? In order to make the potion for the curse, what did
he need? Take their true love, right?
He took, you know, a hair from David's cloak, you know, whatever it was. It was that true love.
Mm-hmm.
And so he sees, and then when he was having relationship problems earlier in the season,
right?
Who did he go to for help? He went to David.
Yeah, that's true.
So
I thought that was cute, actually. Yes.
Oh,
he's like, you're asking me for dating advice,
and he says, he's like, No, I'm not doing that.
He got nervous, you know.
He got nervous.
It was cute.
I love when Rumple gets all nervous. I really do. I think he's quite adorable when he gets nervous about stuff.
Agreed.
Gold gets more nervous than Rumple, although Rumple gets nervous. but he doesn't let it show as much. But I think it's kind of cool that he's going to David for help to do this.
Yeah.
It makes sense. I think they could become pretty good friends.
Mm-hmm.
In the chat room, the thing is, he's actually offering to put himself one down to David in order to restore Belle. I don't understand what that means. Can you educate yourself?
Offering to put himself one down to David in order.
I don't understand. Can you rephrase the statement? She's typing.
A favor.
So he's offering himself. Maybe he's offering to do a favor for David.
Maybe.
A deal. He feels like he's maybe having to bet. Oh, he's telling David that he will owe him a favor. So that he's willing to sort of put himself out there. Well, that's something because he's desperate. Why would Gold do that? Because he's desperate. You know, he's really desperate.
The thing with Gold is everything he does, though, it's first towards some goal of his. I mean, every single action that he's made since, you know, day one really has been, you know, so he's always had some kind of motive behind. He's trying to get from A to Z, basically. And what is
well,
the episode?
Yeah. I mean, the whole curse. This is a man with great
patience.
He's also got an incredible amount of patience.
Mm-hmm.
He's willing to wait.
I'm thinking that, too, because I'm like, oh, my God, like, how many years did he wait to get together with Bay? You know, when you look at the big thing, it's like, oh, my God.
Hundreds of years. Yeah, right? Which is kind of cool. It's, you know, it's patience, it's love.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's, you know, he is desperate to get Belle back, to get her memory back. And I am really, I can't wait to, and then Robin Hood. You know, we have Robin Hood.
Yes, mm-hmm. I cannot wait to see the Robin Hood thing. I love Robin Hood. That's one of my favorite stories ever.
Okay, so, all right, what's your favorite Robin Hood telling ever? Movies, TV, doesn't matter.
Well, I like the Kevin Costner Robin Hood movie.
What about the Mel Brooks?
His accent was awful, though, I will say.
So this is my thing. Kevin Costner is great. He was great in the Hatfields and McCoys. He was brilliant.
Yes.
He's wonderful in every baseball movie he's ever done.
True.
Field of Dreams.
I love that. Oh, my God. Well, what about Dances with Wolves? Hello.
Dances with Wolves. I mean, he's playing an Americana kind of character. He's great. Perfect. Alan Rickman stole that movie. I'm sorry.
I liked it. I was
Kevin
just all enthralled with the whole...
He is in Dick Van Dyke. He is in Dick Van Dyke in Mary Poppins territory. As far as that accent, oh my God.
Mary Poppins territory. I love that analogy.
Dick Van Dyke in Mary Poppins territory. Yes, indeed.
Oh, I love it.
My favorite Robin Hood. I would have to say I have two of them. One is the original with Errol Flynn. Olivia de Havilland. It's the music, just even the music was brilliant. Mm-hmm. And then I liked Sean Connery who was in it with him? Robin and Marion.
Sean Connery.
Was that Audrey Hepburn?
I don't remember.
But that was a great movie, too. But every time that original Robin Hood is on with Errol Flynn on TV, I have to watch it. I just have to watch it. I was a big Errol Flynn fan. I mean, obviously, long before I was born. I'm not that old. long before I was born.
Oh, I liked my Kevin Costner moment.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's interesting that Sean Connery played Robin Hood because his son also played Robin Hood.
Yes, right.
Oh, that's true.
DVDs.
I forgot about that.
Right, did. Jason. Jason played Robin Hood.
Yeah.
You know, Robin, it should be fun because Robin Hood is one of my favorite legends
characters
of all time.
Yeah.
I love Robin Hood. Robin Hood is one of those, you know, great sort of bad guy, good guys. You know,
I just and I like the way that he, you know, it's like for the good of the people, you know. Doing the right thing, steal from the rich to give to the poor. I love that. It's
Class warfare.
There you go. Social commentary.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Robin Hood as social commentary would make a great dissertation. I'm sure it's been done. So I'm kind of curious as to Rumpel and Robin Hood, how that goes.
Do you guys think that when Gold made the call, the bell, do you think she remembered anything? I mean, that's what I was kind of hoping. Maybe she remembered something.
I would have bet anything that
she
call,
did.
That incredible call.
That was the best ever.
Would have triggered something. And see, I think that's – and we really haven't had much in the way of episodes since then, have we?
No. They kind of left us.
We don't know the impact of that. We really don't. And so I'm hoping that call is where it starts, where we start this episode.
Me too.
That was the problem with the hiatus and why I thought it was a mistake not to address that in last night's show was because I think that next episode, this is going to be really important. There was one scene and that was a really important scene for that relationship.
It was a very
important.
We have gotten important scenes though when we do get them together, which I think is very cool.
I would disagree with those who say we've got no Belle Rumpel this year. We have.
Oh yeah, I disagree with that.
We've had some really good things.
It's
they've been they've been short and sporadic.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're almost out of time, guys.
Oh, my God. That was quick.
Last second. I know. It went really, really fast. Thank you. And, you know, it's like I'm going to go back and watch my TV to find out what's going on with the investigation, with the bombing.
Me too.
And you know, our hearts and prayers, I'm sure I can speak for the two of you, our hearts and prayers are with the people of Boston and the victims of tonight's bombing. So I will see you all. We'll see you guys next week. Hopefully you'll come back on. We can talk about a house episode. We can talk about a
one-time
episode, guys.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Barbara.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Good night, everybody.
Bye. Have a good one. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.